Welcome to episode 3 of the 4-part series where I gave a talk at the Toronto AI User Group. There's a ton of amazing content in there. Make sure you tune in. Let's talk about data science and the loop of sadness. Right? This is our data science loop of sadness. So when they ask me, how do I know which one to use? I say, try them. What if it doesn't work? Try a different one. How long does it take? Go ask your data scientist whose door is locked right now. Yeah. Yeah, it depends on if you're using it. They were nice to me at Microsoft. They let me, this has a 2080 RTX in there. I know. I can run MNIST at a second per epoch. I know. I'm all of a sudden, I see all these hungry eyes and not for the pizza. Holy cow. Right? And so this is the bit that people don't understand about development. And if you look at data science code from professional data scientists, you can almost see where they changed their mind. In the code. Right? And that's why people complain about data scientist code. I say, slow down. Data scientists don't write code to put into production. They write code to prove that a model will work. So step off. All right. So let's talk about another thing. What I did, though, in this case, is I forced the digits to all be on a single line, right? Because I forced it to be a linear model. Did you see that? But it turns out that there's some relationships here that are actually quite useful, like this way that it's losing. So how do we do that? Well, let's talk about filters and pooling. So a filter is actually a very interesting operation that you would think doesn't do anything, right? So for example, here is what this filter does. Basically, we're going to take this, We're going to do this box right here. We're going to dot product it with this box, and then we're going to put the answer here. And then we're going to do it again here. And then we're going to do it again here. And then we're going to do it again here. I'm just explaining what this is doing, and I'm not telling you why. I'm just telling you what it is. I'll show you why in a second. And so we get 4 numbers. But this is not good because it destroys the image, right? We're losing pixels around the edges. So you can do this thing called padding. Padding. It's called same padding, by the way, if you're using it. Now when we do it, notice that we get the exact same amount of pixels back that we want, right? Cool. Let's talk about pooling and stride. What if we want to make the thing smaller after we've done the, you know, the little filterings? So basically, this is called a pooling, where we're basically taking this box and we're putting the biggest number in here. We'll take this box and we'll put the biggest number in here, and then we'll do that again, right? And stride has to do with how much do you move over, right? So are you going to move over just one pixel at a time? Now, you might be wondering, what does this actually do? Right? I will show you. So basically, I wrote a crop and resize, and I wrote a convolution in NumPy, right? Because everyone has all sorts of spare time, right? And then I also wrote a pooling that takes the max out of it, right? Max pooling. So by the way, that filter is also called a convolution. Well, I said that too fast. Now here is the same. Remember how we did 1, 1, 1, 0, 0, 0, -1? I decided to try that one out to see what happened. And what I did is I took some important pictures that matter to me, and I'm going to go ahead and try to run, like these are important pictures, right? You saw a wedding and thought mine, right? Look what happens when I do this convolution over this image. Pow! What did it do? It found the edges without me doing anything. What happens when I pull it? Boom! It enhances them. So you know how back in the day when you'd watch like CSI Miami and they'd be like, zoom, enhance, and you're like, that's stupid. Turns out they can do that now, right? Sounds stupid. But that's what it's doing. What this is doing is this is enhancing an aspect of the image. Let's do it with another picture. Here's some of, again, these are important pictures to me of the kids. And let me do one that actually makes sense, a fence. That's crazy, right? That convolution is doing that. It's basically creating a new picture for you. And it turns out that when you look at this operation, it's a different form of the dot product. It's just rolled out differently, right? And so when you make these things, you can actually create these convolutions, which are matrices, that go over the image and are making a new image for you. They're basically making new images for you. Now, what images is it making? I don't know. It's making the images that make the optimization work better. And so it will choose these for you. And so if you do this style of thing, you get like 99% on MNIST, right? Or something higher. You're basically doing two convolutions, a pooling, and a ReLU over them, and then a softmax at the end. But you always unroll it with imaging, with computer vision, you always unroll it so that it does something like this, right? And so these are called convolutional neural networks because these convolutions, what they do, especially with images, is they're able to generate very complex images. And you've seen them like where at the bottom, it's like it found this edge. And then up in a layer, it's like it found a nose. What? Right? Because it's basically generating new images as it goes along. Now, the problem I have with this is it seems awful magical, like the computer is learning about noses. It isn't. These things are not intelligent. I had a guy argue with me. Like, this is what he told me. He was trying to say about like AI rights, you know, like, and I was like, it's a computer. Seth, you're talking like we used to talk about animals. It's a bunch of numbers in a friggin' network. It has no feelings and no thoughts. Like you're thinking, but what about the ones that generate art, Seth? They're just transposes of these things, right? Because they generate images forward, right? It's a transpose convolution which generates a bigger. And I didn't even know how to respond. I was like, oh, do your computers have names? Mine do. I name them after Tolkien characters, incidentally. The cloud, though, right? How am I doing on time? Oh, I'm doing pretty good. The cloud, though, how do we do this in the cloud? Well, here's the thing. This is the way we do it on Azure Machine Learning, but look, the thing about Azure Machine Learning that I like is that you don't have to use all or nothing. You can use it just to register your models, and that's it. Like, do you version the models that the machine learning algorithms produce? You should. Right? Usually, as data scientists, we're like, hey, I made a new model. Where is it? It's on the share. And then you have to go home and take a long shower, right? Because you know you put that on the share. People are looking at that file that you put it there, right? And that's a problem. So you can use it to register and manage models. You can use it to have images of your things. You can use it to deploy. You can use it to prepare data. You can use any of these, whatever you want. Like, this is just use what you want. Use what you like. If this adds benefit to you, great. If it doesn't, great. Tell me why, and I'll go tell them at the home office, right? Hey, this stinks because Bill at the Toronto AI user group said this doesn't work for me because of this, and we want to fix it. Here's what it looks like when we actually, I'll just go to it. I went too far. Okay, so if you take a look at this, this is our Azure Machine Learning Studio where we do a bunch of stuff. Now, if you're a data scientist, I'll give you an example. MSR once gave me some code, it's Microsoft Research, that generated like novel pictures of birds from text that you write. Like, this is a blue bird. And it would create an image of a blue bird, right? It did some cool GAN stuff. I didn't know about it at the time. But as I looked at it, I realized he was using like a really weird version of PyTorch on Python 2.6. Like any of you that have had any experience playing with Python on your machine, it's a dumpster fire, right? And maybe I just suck at it. If any of you are like, no, Seth, it's not, come afterwards and educate me, seriously. Because I've had a lot of problems. And on top of that, I've had a lot of problems because I use Windows. Just leave it there. Just let it hang out there, right? It's getting better, right? So he gives me this thing, and I'm like, how am I ever going to run this? Well, And I thought, I'll just use a container. Do you use containers when you do your machine learning stuff? It's nice, right? It sucks right now, and I keep fighting the OS people. You need to give me GPU pass-through on my container. It's partly our fault, too. And I keep telling them. I keep telling them that they're actually working on WSL, Windows Subsystem for Linux, GPU pass-through. So they are going to work on that. So that would be super nice, right? But I just want a straight Docker, let me hit the GPU, because if you've ever run stuff without a GPU, right, you have nothing to warm your hands by in the dead of winter, right? Oh, it's running, right? So basically, here's the thing. And the reason why I bring this up is because there are certain things that we should just share as data scientists. Like, what data sets are we using? In Azure Machine Learning, you can create data sets and version them. So that means that you're like, well, how come your model's better? Well, I'm using version foo of data set, right? You can keep track of your experiments. What is an experiment? It's a training run. Not only that, you can rerun it exactly the same way anybody else ran it, right? Which is really cool. You can also create pipelines, right? For those of you that are familiar with Kubeflow, it's exactly the same, but we add a layer of SDK over it, where you don't have to do like container ops and you don't have to know about Docker. You just say, here's my code and here's my environment, do it, right? We have this notion of models where you can store and version your models. And we have these notions of endpoints. There's two kinds of endpoints for us. There's the endpoints for inference, and there's the endpoints for rerunning machine learning pipelines. Why would you do that? Well, because of data drift. What if you wanted to unstale your models every week and rerun a pipeline? You'd basically just call the thing. And the cool thing about these pipelines is it will retain information that it's done used before. So if the parameters don't change, it won't rerun that section of the code. And you know that this can be very costly. Like if you're rerunning this step and it's converting 2 terabytes of images into 1 terabyte of TF records, you don't want to run that every time. Right? And so it's able to know if the parameters don't change and these things stay the same, you can do that. And that's what the endpoints are for. Now here's the other things for managing. We have shared compute and shared data stores. You're probably wondering, what is the difference between a data store and a data set? Great question. It's like the difference between a hard drive and a folder for data science. In this folder, this is this data set, right? The data store for us is basically Azure storage. You could just dump everything there, and you can run these algorithms. And it's all happening in the cloud. And here's the cool thing that I didn't tell you. When you run the experiments, it will mount Azure storage as if it was part of the hard drive. It's crazy, which is really cool. Okay, so now I'm to the part where I'm going to answer any questions you have about what I've told you so far at Azure Machine Learning or anything. So are there any questions? Okay, we good? Did I scare everybody?